How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is June 24, 2014. Figure4Online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. We have the go-home show for the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. That, of course, is Raw tonight. We've got some new matches. Vicky Guerrero is gone. Dave, what did you think of this show?
I don't know. It was, I didn't really think anything of it one way or the other, really. It was just kind of a go-home show. I mean, the big thing was the Vicky Guerrero thing, because the main event just felt like that they were just going through the motions, that they had really no new idea for a match, so they just replayed what they did on SmackDown. It just felt like it was a typical build. We got the second Money in the Bank participants. I guess it looks like we're going to have a Rusev Big E match on the pay-per-view, which I thought we had last month too. And Paige and Naomi. So they got that. They didn't even announce a pre-show match. They just announced that Daniel Bryan would be on the pre-show. So I don't know if that's in lieu of a match or that's the big thing, is he's going to do an interview in the ring. I'm not really sure. So we got an official announcement of one new match and the participants in the second ladder match, and Kane thrown into the big match, which kind of makes sense. He was kind of the odd man out. I figured he would have been in it all along. So there you go. It's just kind of there, and we'll see what they do on the show as far as who comes out the winners of the two matches. I think that the favorites are probably Cena and Rollins, though.
Yeah, they did announce that Daniel Bryan's first appearance since being stripped of the title is going to be on the pre-show. I don't know why, but I just thought, like, if John Cena had been injured and stripped of the title, do you really think his first match back, or his first promo back after being gone for like weeks, would be on a pay-per-view pre-show?
No,
it just was. I don't know. I didn't like that announcement.
No. And it really wasn't hyped. It was just kind of said.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like, wow, what's he going to say? It was just kind of like, well, there it is. It was like, I think it was one of those things where we want him to appear. So, because it's a pay-per-view and he's like one of our big stars, we want him to appear. But, what's he going to say? I'll be back at SummerSlam. I'll be back at the July pay-per-view. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll find out. I thought the show was overall, I liked it. I mean, I did see the exact same main event on SmackDown, so I could have done without that, although it was a different finish. But I thought there was some pretty decent stuff on the show. Opened up with Stephanie coming out. There were ladders everywhere. She addressed Vicky, said she could not tolerate gross negligence, called her down to the ring, said that she always tried to do what was best for business, blamed Roman Reigns. This is Vicky, by the way. Said it was Roman Reigns that put all the stuff in Stephanie's coffee and tried to shift the blame. And Steph said, listen, Roman was your biggest failure to date. I told you not to screw up the Battle Royal. That's exactly what you did. Roman not only competed in the Battle Royal, but he won. And Vicky said, well, it won't happen again. And Steph said, you're right. It won't.
You know what's interesting about all this? There was no attempt by Triple H or Stephanie to do anything to Roman Reigns.
That's right.
It was all about Vicky, understandable. This whole angle was really all about Vicky, and it was just a way to write her off the show. And so, in the sense of, you would think that when they were going to come back, they would be mad at Roman Reigns for, you know, getting in the Battle Royal or for being in the match that they didn't want him in. They would sick somebody on him. They would do an angle with him. But I think the idea is that they want to keep him. I guess the idea is they want to keep him untouched, and I can get that. But just from a storyline standpoint, you know, you would think that, who would they really be after? You know, of the two, you know, Vicky, the unwitting one of the bunch, or Roman Reigns, the one who sent her to the hospital and made her, you know, and double crossed them in their in their match and the one that they wanted to keep out of the pay-per-view main event, who got in anyway.
That's right. So they ignored him largely throughout the show, but they put all the blame on Vicky, and Stephanie said, well, tonight, she was about to say she was fired. Vicky cut her off, said she would do anything to keep her job, including beg. By the way, Steph cut this promo on Vicky that was just, she said, 9 years you've been riding Eddie's coattails. We took pity on you. Obviously, you couldn't be a diva, so we tried making you a GM. You couldn't even do that right. Very mean-spirited promo. And so finally, she announces that I will either fire you tonight or you can remain the GM of SmackDown. But you can only remain the GM if you win your match tonight. And Vicky said, I'm not a competitor. And so Steph took this as a resignation, and Vicky said, well, at least tell me the opponent. And Stephanie said, your opponent is me. And so Vicky then fired up. She said, there's one name people respect more than McMahon in the business, and that is Guerrero. She said her husband taught her to lie, cheat, and steal, so she accepted the match and turned herself babyface. Everybody went nuts, chanted Vicky's name, and Vicky stormed off, and so the match was made for later. Her latest final appearance here on Raw. Had Luke Harper and Jimmy Uso. Luke and Eric Rowan have new music. It appears to be an accordion rendition of He's Got the Whole World in His Hands, performed by someone who's never played the accordion before. Lawler actually asked, did they record their own entrance music? First match was quick. Jay and Rowan had a fight outside. Jimmy was distracted. Luke killed him with a clothesline, got the pin. So afterwards, Jay grabbed the mic and challenged Rowan. So then they had Rowan versus Jay Uso. And of course, as you can probably guess, this time the Usos won. Jay hit a big splash as Jimmy took out Harper on the outside. So as Cole noted, a split tonight. You may as well have said, parody. So
yeah, that's fine.
They're setting up a tag team match on Sunday. Wyatt's destroyed the Usos afterwards. They actually did a great spot where Harper gave Rowan a hard slap and then fired him up, did an avalanche big boot combo. Place went nuts. Good crowd here tonight, by the way, in Washington, D.C. And then Bray appeared on the big screen and essentially suggested all three of them would be champions after Sunday. So I guess we'll see. What'd you think?
It was, I don't know, it was fine. There was nothing, you know, I didn't really think much one way or the other. It was just typical, you know, split two quick matches and set up the pay-per-view. Didn't make me long to see the match, but it didn't turn me off either. So it was just, I felt, you know, kind of, it just felt like it was more filling time than anything else.
So then we had Daniel Bryan, as noted, is going to be doing his first ever interview at the on the pre-show. As noted, no announcement of any matches or anything like that, so I guess we'll see if they add anything. We had a very wacky video. Lana and Rusev were outside the U.S. Capitol, the White House. They played the music to kick this segment off. Rusev was standing there in a suit, sunglasses, and he was wearing his medal all out there on the street. Very wacky. He said that our president was inferior. He put over the Kremlin.
Lana said all that.
Lana said all this. That's right. All he said was Rusev crush. But
yeah,
she wanted America to wake up. The only option, she said, was to bow down to Vladimir Putin. And that was their big deal. So
yeah, I thought that was kind of cute, you know, as far as, you know, to get some heat and things like that. That was fine. That was good.
We had Alicia and Naomi in a match with Cameron and Paige doing commentary. They bantered back and forth forever. Cameron can at least sort of talk after a full season of Total Divas, but unfortunately they gave her some lines to read, and that didn't come off so well. She called Paige a rookie, which I thought was awesome, since Paige has been wrestling for about 10 years now, yeah.
Yeah, and she's been wrestling for about, what, a year and a half?
A year and a half.
Yeah. I thought that it was Michael Cole. You could tell there were a couple of points where Michael Cole was just furious because the women wouldn't shut up and he was trying to call the match. And
which is hilarious, since normally they completely ignore the matches.
Yeah. So, I think that you know, I don't know. I don't know where Cameron. I guess Cameron's going to fit in some form or other in that match on Sunday. That's the only thing I can think of. You know, she'll probably get involved in the finish, because if not, she kind of, like, you know, got in the way of the match, because when it was over, you know, you wanted to see Paige against Cameron, and Naomi was just kind of there instead of see Paige against Naomi. In fact, I almost thought they were going to do a three-way the way that it was being built up, but they didn't do that.
I figure Cameron just costs Naomi the match on Sunday. And
yeah, that's what I'm figuring too. When Naomi has it won, and then maybe that'll go to a three-way on the next pay-per-view.
So anyway, the match itself just went on forever. And
it wasn't really that long.
It felt like forever with the commentary. Naomi finally hit a Scorpion Death Drop for the pin, which was actually a missed time, but she kind of saved it. And then Paige and Naomi, since it's a babyface match, they had a stare down and a handshake. So there you go. Sunday, titles on the line. We had Sheamus backstage with Roman Reigns. It's kind of funny because, like, I think Sheamus wanted to, he was explaining that he wanted to have a meeting or something, or discuss the match, or talk about how the main event was going to go. And I was just thinking, did Sheamus forget that they had the same match on Friday and Roman dominated everybody and won the match? This is the last guy you need to be having a talk with before this battle tonight. So the story was, Sheamus is the funny guy. Roman is deadly serious. Sheamus said tonight can be magical, and Roman said, I don't believe in magic. I believe in Roman Reigns, and so should you. Apparently he did a pretty good promo on the post-show, too. I didn't see it, but people said Roman did a good job there. So we had a Rock and Hercules commercial. If you haven't seen it yet, Rock has long hair and a beard. If you're wanting to see Rock with long hair and a beard, Hercules, the movie for you. Had the inspirational Bo Dallas, as he is billed, and Titus O'Neil in yet another rematch from SmackDown. Bo did his promo before the match.
Hey, what happened to Bo's eye?
I don't know. It was like that on SmackDown, too, so it must have happened.
So it would if it was like that on SmackDown, then it should have happened on, it probably happened on Raw on Monday, because it wasn't like that on Raw.
That's a long time to have a black eye.
Yeah, a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So probably got potatoed somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
So he cuts his promo. Titus is not amused. Titus beat him up for about a minute, and then Bo hit the Bodog out of nowhere for the pin. Fans were cheering. He cut a promo. He was starting to cut a promo about how he was 9 and Bo, and Titus knocked the mic out of his hands. And so Bo runs outside, grabs it, and blames himself. He says, I guess I'm Mr. Butterfingers. Everybody laughs. So he told Titus to get back on the horse. He thanked all the fans. He told Titus to don't stop believing. And everybody cheered, and away he went. And I can tell you that Journey is, in fact, still performing, so maybe they can play Don't Stop Believing at WrestleMania next year.
Yeah.
They should try.
Okay.
If the guy's still over by then.
That's true. I mean, if he's super over, sure. I don't think they're going to come cheap.
You're probably right. Probably right. Hunter came out and said it was ironic that he's here in Washington, D.C., and he is the bad guy. He said he always just does what's best for business. He said on the pay-per-view there was not only a title match, but also a Money in the Bank ladder match. He said that he told Cole last week that Seth was the first entrant. He has the rest of the lineup right now. No favoritism, he said. Everyone in this match are men who are the best for business. I forget how he termed it. But anyway, the guys are Kofi Kingston, Jack Swagger, Dolph Ziggler, believe it or not, made it in, Rob Van Dam, Bad News Barrett, and Seth Rollins. An eclectic lineup.
Well, it's what they got.
I guess so.
I mean, if you've got Big E with Rusev, so you're keeping those two out, that's pretty much everyone there. I mean, it's like you know, and Bo Dallas, who I guess probably with that eye, it's probably a pretty good idea for him not to be in a ladder match this week.
So he said there is one man that I think is going to win the entire thing, and he acted like he was going to say Rob Van Dam, but then said he was talking about Seth Rollins. Seth came out, he did a promo about how people need to get over this sellout thing, said it's been 3 weeks, get over it. He created the Shield, he destroyed them, it was his deal, it's in the past. He said he's going to climb the ladder, grab the briefcase, be the new Mr. Money in the Bank, and of course, RVD's music hit. They bantered back and forth. Rob said, I don't think you guys take me seriously. And Seth said, I do take you seriously, although I would have taken you more seriously in 2005. And Rob said, in 2005, you were asking your parents if you could stay up to watch me on TV. And he said he was a former ECW and WWE champion. He said, surely Hunter remembered when he crushed his larynx at Elimination Chamber, which I remember, actually.
And, I don't know. I don't know that I would be bragging about that one.
Probably not the best thing to brag about.
I mean, not because it's about Triple H, because obviously the line's scripted. But you know, I mean, of all your accomplishments, the fact that, I mean, granted the trajectory and all that was pretty difficult. Nobody really knew exactly what they were doing. You were leaping off of a high pod and things like that. But still, I wouldn't like call it like one of your prouder moments that you nearly killed somebody in the ring.
Well, in the storyline world of WWE, it was a very successful frog splash by him.
I guess. I don't know.
Anyway.
You know, that you know, because, I mean, that was a legit injury, so.
It was.
Yeah.
So he challenged Seth, and Hunter said the match was on, so they had a match. It was all right. The best part of it was at the end when Seth hits his buckle bomb in the curb stomp, and RVD just did about the best selling of a curb stomp ever. Looked like he virtually broke his neck. So before Seth can get the pin, it outruns Dean Ambrose through the crowd, attacked him for the DQ. They had a wild brawl all over ringside until the refs came down to break it up. Crowd was going crazy for crazy Dean, and he did this wild promo about how you may as well put him in Money in the Bank now because he's going to beat the pay-per-view one way or another. He's going to beat Seth's ass. And he's going to grab the briefcase and be the new Mr. Money in the Bank. So clearly he does not understand how this match works because you have to be in the match for that to happen.
He clearly does because he got in the match by using that doing that promo.
Well, that's true. He did threaten his way into the match.
Yeah. So he does know how it works.
Well, he knows how it works, but had he not been in the match, you can't just go steal the briefcase.
Yeah, I guess not. They haven't had anyone do that so far, have they?
Not yet.
Yeah. Maybe that's next year.
But in fact, Seth backstage demanded Hunter put Dean in the match. His explanation, and I'm glad they had an explanation here, was that the guy promised he was going to be there, and the last thing I want is to be climbing the ladder, and this crazy guy runs in out of nowhere and costs me the match. I want him to be there. I want to be able to see him. I want to keep my eye on him, so please put him in this match. And so Hunter said, well, if this blows up in your face, it's all on you. And Seth said, I've got it. And so Hunter liked his confidence, and he said, Dean is in the match. So there you go. Wade Barrett, Dolph Ziggler, Intercontinental title match. They had a great television title match here. Place was going crazy for these near falls. Pretty much kicked out of all of these moves. And finally, Ziggler went for a big splash in the corner, and Barrett gave him a bullhammer out of midair. Gum, I presume, or spit or something went flying, looked like a tooth, and then he pinned him. Awesome finish, really good match, and Barrett gets the win here, retains the title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really good. That was the highlight of the show as far as wrestling went, by far, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was really the only match that was just more than just, I would say, a normal match. Most of the stuff was really quick, and the main event was... You know, the main event was okay. It was nothing spectacular by any means. I mean, it was all right, but this one was pretty good. This was good.
Renee interviewed Vicky, and Vicky said, well, I know I'm not the most beloved person there, but I'm sick of being a doormat. I will take my dignity back tonight. I do not want forgiveness. I have no regrets. And Orton came up, and he said, well, you're going to regret what you did last week, what you did with Reigns. You're going to get what you deserve, just like I will get what I deserve when I win the title on Sunday. He said, I would like to say it was nice knowing you, but we both know that would be a lie. So, not friendly words from Orton as she left the company. So she came out. She's in the ring in her gear. And Stephanie...
They announced a Special Olympics special on FS1 next
That's
week.
Right. That's right. 7 o'clock p.m. next week. WWE presents a one-hour Special Olympic show. So, FS1. So Vicky's in the ring. Stephanie comes out in her dress. And she says, the match is not taking place in the ring. It is taking place over here. And there is a pool full of what I presume was chocolate pudding. But they said it smelled terrible and God knows what it was. So Stephanie said, whoever goes into the pool loses. And if you lose, Vicky, you are fired. And so Stephanie called out Layla, Rosa Mendez, and Alicia Fox to go after Vicky. Vicky, of course, ran away. They grabbed her. They were going to toss her in the pool, but she broke free. And one at a time, all three heels ended up in the pool. So Vicky then turned and she started doing yes chants. And Stephanie, from behind, did a running knee and tossed her into the pool to win the match. So Vicky's all covered in pudding or whatever. Stephanie is celebrating. She performs a horrible rendition of the goodbye song. And suddenly she realizes, oh no, I am in between Vicky and the pool. And so she begins to plead her case, including saying, let's think about your retirement. Or your, what did she say? Let's think about
your retirement.
Yeah, you're like, yeah. I guess maybe, you know, you get some sort of retirement benefit or something like that if you don't toss me in the pool. Anyway.
Severance package.
A severance. That's what
she didn't say that, though.
She didn't say it. She should have. That would have been better. But
yeah.
Vicky tosses her in the pool. She does the pratfall. She flips around. Referee tries to pull her out. She yanks the referee in.
Yeah, it's Chad Patton.
Poor Chad Patton. And then Vicky does the Eddie Guerrero dance on the stage, kisses the sky, says, this is for you, Eddie. And away she goes. And then Stephanie vowed that she was going to take it out on each and every one of the fans in Washington, D.C., which I presume means including Todd Martin. So he better keep his eye out.
Yeah, they did a hell of a job of getting covered in that gunk.
Oh, yeah.
Stephanie and Vicky. I mean, Vicky was just caked in it, and Stephanie just, I mean, she didn't half-ass it. She was all in and rolling around and making sure that it was just engulfing her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, these McMahons, when it's time for them to be humiliated, they will be humiliated.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if this was the right time, though. I guess it was just as a going-away thing for Vicky to give her give her something good on the way out, since she was such a loyal employee and she stayed the extra months and things like that. But Stephanie, you know, you could argue Stephanie is one of the few characters that actually had real heat on her, and it should have been saved for, you know what I mean? Like, something big should have been saved for something big.
The problem is they already humiliated her last week with the vomit and everything. So,
yeah. So they did it again.
Did it again. Byron Saxon interviewed Goldust and Stardust, both of whom put on all of their makeup and everything in order to not wrestle on this program.
That's what they look like now.
So they go to McDonald's, for example?
No. Whenever they're on camera, that's like the Undertaker in his gimmick. That's their gimmick.
I see.
You know, you're not going to see them backstage without their gimmick.
I guess not. Man, flying across the country to do an interview with Byron Saxon. It's a rough life. So yeah. Stardust sang When You Wish Upon a Star. Goldust was impressed, and he said, now I'm the normal one. And Kofi and Swagger, no heat. They had a botched... Well,
third hour, and you put those two out there, what do you expect?
It was a death spot for them. They did a botch Hurricane Rana spot, kind of tried to save it. Kofi did a flip dive outside, kind of landed on his head. Suffice to say, this bout was a struggle. And Swagger finally got him in the ankle lock. Kofi almost got the ropes, yanked back to the middle, tapped out. Swagger beats Kofi, heading into Money in the Bank.
Kind of made Kofi look pretty weak going into, you know, in theory, you know, Kofi's biggest match in a long time.
That's true.
But it's not like anyone really, you know.
It doesn't matter.
No. I mean, I think that everyone knows that the stars of that match are Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose anyway.
Yes.
The rest of those, you know, and Dolph Ziggler and Kofi Kingston are there to provide some spectacular bumps and acrobatics. And Jack is just there because they need bodies.
They need another body.
They don't have enough depth, so he's there.
Paige and Naomi at the pay-per-view is noted. We've got Renee interviewing Alberto Del Rio. And Cesaro and Heyman come up. They're all debating who's going to be the next champion. And Cesaro finishes off with a line about how, I would talk to you, Del Rio, but I only speak five languages and none of them are loser. And shockingly, the crowd gasped at this line. We had Sandow added out as Abe Lincoln. We had a lot of Abe Lincoln jokes. JBL said Lincoln used to wrestle for Capital Wrestling, which, of course, was Vince Sr.'s promotion. Cole had some Lincoln wrestling historical facts. Since, of course, Lincoln was, in fact, a wrestler. So Sandow wrestles in his coat and top hat. It did not last long. Big ending. So for the record, Big E Langston fared better than Jack Armstrong against Abe Lincoln. So Tom something got in the ring. What's this guy's name? Tom?
Who are you talking about?
This fella Tom that was in the ring to interview Big E.
Tom Phillips.
Tom Phillips. There we
Tom
go.
Phillips from NXT, yeah.
That's right. That's right. A completely generic man. Todd Phillips.
Tom.
Tom.
Todd went to ESPN.
That's right. That's right. Man, I remember when they used to have Todd, and it was like, boy, this Todd is such a geek. They love these announcers who are geeks. And now, you know, I went to UFC, and there's Todd Grisham, and it's like, this guy's, you know, tall, good-looking guy. And now we've got all these other geeks. Anyway, Tom something interviewed.
Yeah, and he's out there doing freaking marathons and triathlons.
Yeah. They got rid of the wrong guy.
Well, they didn't get rid of him. He left on his own accord.
Well, he made the right decision then.
He got a job with ESPN, and I'm sure he's very happy.
Yes.
I understand that the announcers that leave WWE for ESPN usually do not regret that move. Speaking of which, remember they were going to have the big announcement of Jonathan Coachman as doing the WWE Network?
I do.
He was going to have a job at the WWE Network. I don't know. It never materialized. Because that was months ago.
Every time I go to the gym, they always have ESPN or something playing on the big screen. And I seem to think that I see Coachman there regularly.
Well, yeah, he works there.
Doesn't appear he's on his way out.
No, he was never going to leave. It was just going to be...
I see, side job.
He was just going to do a side job, do like, you know, some wraparounds or something like that, you know, for the network. And I don't know if they cut back on the budget or...
They better cut back on the budget.
They couldn't make it work timing-wise. I don't know. I mean, I remember being told about it. Coachman teased the announcement, and then nothing happened.
By the way, I've done a bunch of interviews of late for the death of WCW, and people, every single show, people are asking me about the WWE Network. And you and I had a debate a while back. I strongly, passionately argued that the idea that they launched this network without the Raws and Nitros, I thought was just, I couldn't even conceive of any reason why. And you argued that, well, you know, you don't want to give it all away at the beginning, you know, etc. But in The Observer last week, you noted that Fight Pass is doing great. And they're doing great in terms of renewals and everything like that. And they got the whole entire library up there. So,
yeah.
couldn't you thus extrapolate that and argue that, well, maybe they should have all those Raw Nitros up there?
Not necessarily. I mean, we don't know. I mean, their renewals are good, but we don't know how the renewals are going to do as far as compared to WWE. But you got to remember that they're looking with a lot smaller universe. I mean, they're only expecting, you know, to get, you know, you got to remember they were expecting when they launched this thing to get 100,000 people. If WWE was looking to get 100,000 people, they could put everything up they want, you know, and because they keep that 100,000. They need to maintain, not just get, they need to maintain, and they need to have something to hook these people at that 6 month mark. And you know, putting things up one by, you know, putting things up one by one is more of an incentive to renew. I mean, again, you already had 2,000 hours up. I mean, it's like, it's not like there's not enough content.
I know, but it's 2,000 hours of stuff that I would never bother watching for the most part.
Well, I'm sure they think that the pay-per-views are more valuable than the single episodes of the TV show. And the single episodes of the TV show should be out in order anyway. Because one of my big complaints, and one of the reasons that I lost interest in watching any of the old stuff, is because it's not in order.
It's not in order. They're missing episodes. It's,
yep. And so it's like the way that those things, and plus the promotions that I wanted to see the most, they don't have anything up of anyway. But even if they did, if it's not, if the shows aren't in order, they're, I don't want to say they're worthless because they're not, but a lot of the, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, the storylines come from the week to week little changes in stories, not just throw this, you know, we'll just do random shows here and there. You know, it's just not really all that valuable, especially, you know, if you're not invested in the storylines of what they were doing at the time. I mean, I think that they should have, but I mean, the thing is, and this is again goes with Fight Pass. The reality is that what's driving it and the stuff that people are buying and watching is all the new stuff. It's not really the old stuff. I mean, it exists. There are people who go to it, but you know, even with the you know, the audience that they have, it's almost all stuff from the last, you know, the most viewed stuff is stuff from September to the present. So it's the last, whatever it is, 10 months, 9 months. On the UFC thing. And on WWE, if you look at it, you know, when they added up all the viewership of all the clashes, when they finally put those clashes up, you know, it was still less than you know, most of the shows, you know, the new weekly shows. I think it was about the same as maybe an NXT or something. But it's, you know, the stuff that people were watching was the pay-per-views, Legends House, NXT. I'm trying to think what else. That's... one of the, you know, they didn't even put a graphic up of the stuff now, but that's, you know, that had been the most watched stuff. You know, it wasn't so much, you know, like WrestleMania 3 or WrestleMania 17, you know, it really wasn't that much of that type of stuff.
Maybe what they need to do is do a real survey. And not a bullshit survey that would tell them they have 60 million potential WWE fans in this country, and ask them, what would you like to see to buy the network if you don't already purchase it?
They've done a million of those surveys with their fan base. They did a million. They did them before they ever started the network.
Well, where are the results? I've never seen these surveys.
I'm sure that the surveys probably told them. I don't know what the surveys told them because I never saw the results either. But they absolutely did them. I mean, I remember that's how we got like a lot of information on what type of stuff they were going to do, was because they were doing the surveys. They did surveys based on prices. They did surveys. They did a million surveys.
Well, I think they should do a survey now. Directed at those who have the option of buying it, but for whatever reason are not.
Yeah, they don't know who those people are.
By the way, I thought of a booking scenario, by the way. Mm-hmm. So they've already flat out, based on one of these surveys, actually, they've already flat out alerted us all that Brock Lesnar is fighting for the title at SummerSlam. They flat out asked, who do you want to see Brock Lesnar defend against at SummerSlam? And it was everybody in the Money in the Bank match. Mm-hmm. So...
Not Kane,
sure. But let's just say that throwing out your average go-to guy, John Cena wins the WWE World Heavyweight title. So mm-hmm. you can do John Cena and Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. Brock Lesnar wins the championship. And at the September pay-per-view, it is the return of Daniel Bryan getting his championship match against Brock Lesnar, which I think would be a decent hook to get people to get that pay-per-view after their renewal is up.
Could be. I don't know. I mean, do they have that confidence that Daniel Bryan's the guy in that spot?
I don't know.
I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm not sure that I don't know that they see Daniel Bryan in that way. I mean, they may. I don't know. I mean, it depends on what the long-term plans are. I mean, my feeling is the long-term plans are getting that championship to Roman Reigns at WrestleMania next year. And if that's the idea. I don't know where Daniel Bryan exactly fits in, because I guess Daniel Bryan could win it, but then he would lose it back to a heel. But God, you know, if it's not Brock, who do you go with? I guess Bray Wyatt. You know, I guess I don't know. Is Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns the WrestleMania main event, or Roman Reigns and Brock? I don't know.
So the main event of this show was Cena, Sheamus, and Roman Reigns against Orton, Bray, Alberto Del Rio, and Cesaro. Same exact match we saw on SmackDown. A little bit different this time. First, they got heat on Cena. Reigns got a hot tag, ran wild on everybody. Then they got heat on him. He was babyface in peril. He makes the hot tag. Sheamus goes crazy. They had an awesome finishing sequence, actually, where everybody's going for a finish. Cena hits the AA on Orton. He hits the AA on Del Rio. He turns around. Cesaro launches him into the air, hits his forearm. And then as Cesaro turns around, Sheamus flies in with the brogue kick and pins him. Finish was great. And as soon as the match ends, they hit Kane's music. Out he comes. He proceeds to destroy everybody. And then Hunter comes out to announce that he is in the WWE World Heavyweight title match. Kane hits his pyro and immediately gets speared out of his boots by Roman Reigns in something that was sort of missed by the camera. And then Roman stands up, glares at Hunter, and the show goes off the air. So they're really pushing that the three big stars on this show are all three former members of The Shield. So I guess we'll see who gets what. Obviously, all three of them can't get something.
Yeah, I don't know. I still am leaning towards thinking that Cena's the one who's going to win the Money in the Bank and not Roman Reigns.
I don't think... If they're going to use him at WrestleMania, I think this is something where somebody's got to screw him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Lead to a side feud with that person for a while, build to the Royal Rumble, and away we go.
Yeah, yeah.
So the entire card, everybody, for this show is a ladder match for the vacant title. Del Rio, Randy Orton, Sheamus, Cesaro, Bray Wyatt, Roman Reigns, John Cena, and Kane. We've got the tag title match, the Usos against the Wyatt family and their new music. We've got the Money in the Bank match, Rollins, Kofi, Swagger, Ziggler, RVD, Bad News Barrett, and Dean Ambrose. And then the women's title match, Paige versus Naomi. And Daniel Bryan talks on the pre-show. And I guess if there's anything else, they'll add it at SmackDown tomorrow.
Yeah, probably Rusev and Big E.
Probably Rusev and Big E, that's right.
Yeah, and then... there's room for another match, probably. Although I guess the two ladder matches will probably go 20 minutes plus. So, but they would still, you would still want, still probably room for one more match, though.
So TNA has got some big stuff coming up in New York. They're doing all sorts of press. They're bringing guys back. They're trying to kill Austin Aries with a six-sided ring.
And they're not selling any tickets.
Not selling any tickets.
No.
Tell us about this. This what's going on.
Well, you know, they're taping Thursday, Friday, Saturday in New York, and, you know, I don't know what else. They're going to do Bobby Lashley, and we talked about all this already. They're going to do Bobby Lashley with Jeff Hardy on the first day, most likely Bobby Lashley with Austin Aries on the second day, probably some kind of a multiple-person match to determine the X Division champion since Austin Aries is going to cash in the title. The Hardys reunite. And Rhino's going to be there. Rhino and EC3 feuding with Tommy Dreamer and Bully Ray. And Homicide, Low-Key, and Brian Cage. It's kind of funny, Brian Cage. You know, he should have been in there a long time ago after that tryout match he had. And somehow they picked Jeff Bradley over him, you know. And then did nothing with Jeff Bradley.
Jay Bradley?
Jay Bradley, sorry. Yeah, yeah, Jay Bradley. So that's the main stuff. From what I gather, the TVs in Bethlehem that are over the next 3 weeks are all pretty good. And I heard the July 10th show is actually a great show, which is the one where Aries beats Sonata to win the X title. I heard that match is great. I think Richards and Edwards, the Wolves, have a really good match with Magnus and Bram. Heard a lot of good things about Bram as far as on these tapings. The women were fine. In fact, in some cases, good. And Lashley, all the Lashley stuff I heard was decent to good. Lashley and Eric Young was another good match. They always seem to have like a good match. So yeah, I heard less talk, but still talk. More wrestling, better wrestling. Great atmosphere in the sense of. They were in a small building, and the people who were there made noise. Not a lot of people, but it's enough that where it looks fine on TV, and that you know, and I think that's what they're counting on for New York. And I mean, with New York, they're going to, you know, if you look at who they're loading the cards up with, the people may hate the Hardys, or, you know, who knows who they're going to get. You don't know which kind of crowd they're going to get. But I mean, as far as, you know, they're going to be into Tommy Dreamer and Bully Ray just for the nostalgia aspect of all that stuff. And, you know, the work rate matches and the X matches will probably get over. Mood is going to be over like crazy in New York, most likely. So, you know, I mean, it should be good. What that means in the long run, I don't know. It's everyone's waiting for the obvious, and the obvious still hasn't happened yet.
And then, of course, this weekend, we've got another New Japan iPay-per-view. What is the lineup for this show?
Yeah. Let's see if I have it here. It's, they've got a, hold on. I got so many things here. This is the G1 schedule. That's not it. Here we go. Yeah, they got June 29th and July the 3rd, I believe it is. No, July the 4th. July the 4th. So June 29th, it's going to be Tomohiro Ishii and Yujiro in the main event, which was built up on the last show. Lineup's pretty solid, though. I mean, as far as it's a lot of tags, but most of them look good. Liger, Tiger Mask, and Mascara Dorada against Bushi, Yohei Komatsu, and Fuego. The Mexicans are always going to get their working shoes on, you know, when they're in Japan. Although Mascara Dorada kind of gets underplayed. He usually, when he's in these matches, they usually have him do like two outstanding spots and that's about it. But with Fuego, I think that they'll probably have him do more. Tenzan, Kojima, and Taguchi against Nagata, Nakanishi, and Captain New Japan, which is your typical stuff. Yano and Yoshihashi against Suzuki and Iizuka, you know, normal stuff. Then Makabe and Honma against Goto and Shibata, which is probably going to be really good. Tanahashi, Kushida, and Alex Shelley against Naito, Ibushi, and Desperado, which is probably going to be tremendous. Very good to tremendous. And then Nakamura, Okada, Rocky Romero, and the returning Alex Kozlov against Bad Luck Fale, Carl Anderson, Doc Gallows, and Tama Tonga. So that'll be a good action match. And then on the 4th, it's going to be Liger, Tiger Mask, and Mascara Dorada against Bushi, Sho, Tanaka, and Fuego. So it's essentially the same match except Sho Tanaka replacing Komatsu. Makabe Honma and Captain New Japan and Taguchi against Tenzan Kojima, Nagata Nakanishi, Yano and Sakuraba and Yoshihashi against Suzuki, Iizuka, and Taka Michinoku. Then Desperado against Alex Shelley in a single. Okada, Nakamura, Ishii, Romero, and Kozlov against Fale, Carl Anderson, Doc Gallows, Yujiro, and Tama Tonga. Then a special match with Tanahashi and Naito teaming up again against Goto and Shibata, which will probably be really good. And then the main event will be Ibushi and Kushida for the junior heavyweight title. So they're giving Ibushi, I guess, is getting a main event, which he should have had on the last show because nobody could follow his match. But they're putting him in the main event. And then I'm trying to think about that. That would be, I believe that would be it as far as iPay-per-views until G1 on June 21st. So, June 21st in Sapporo.
You mean August?
July 21st.
Oh, July 21st, okay.
July 21st, yeah. July 21st, August 10th is G1. So, yeah.
All right, let's jump into the mailbag here. A lot of questions. Ahmad says, prior to Punk departing, the talk was for his feud with Hunter to resemble his Summer of Punk from 2011 program. Could you elaborate on this? Were they going to acknowledge his contract expiring again, or was he going to do another pipe bomb promo?
I have no idea, but they would have. I would assume that they would acknowledge his contract expiring again in some form, but you can't really do the same thing that you did 3 years ago. But, you know, he was high profile. It wasn't going to be a secret. And this time he was actually going to leave. I mean, like, even if he hadn't left when he did, I mean, everybody was pretty much acknowledging that he wasn't signing a new deal. You know, I mean, I guess I would have been skeptical because of the last one, but I know people who knew him, and they were all saying, look, he's you know, I had people who told me that they didn't expect him to make it to July, and others said, no, he'll make it to July, but he ain't signing a new deal. So, so given that, I think that they would have probably played on that July date in his program. But he seems like he's, you know, he was hurting, and you don't want to hurt anymore, I guess.
All righty. This person here says, in his top 50 wrestlers book, Larry Matisick says that the old Memphis territory is often romanticized and that top names would often avoid it. Why is this?
Because the pay sucked. I mean, in the Nick Gulas days, especially, wrestlers, you know, everyone went to Memphis and everyone had their story about Memphis on why they never wanted to go back. With Jarrett, varied, you know. I mean, there were guys, you know, there were guys, if you were in the main event there, you did okay. I mean, it wasn't like it was big, but you did okay. But, you know, with Gulas, I mean, it was just, you know, Gulas was probably, I would think that Gulas was probably I think probably the most hated promoter. I mean, based on what I heard, I mean, as far as because of the payoffs and everything. So, I would say that, everyone went there and everyone, you know, had their story on why they absolutely hated it and couldn't wait to leave. And with Jarrett, you know, you would have, you know, mixed. But, you know, I mean, unless you were one of the chosen ones with Jarrett, the pay wasn't that good there either.
All right. This person says, I don't know if this has been discussed in detail before, but can you explain what exactly went down on the plane ride from hell in 2002? How did things get so out of control? I was at the show in London, Insurrection, the night before, which was also the last ever official WWF show before they changed to WWE. What happened on the plane flight?
People drank too much and got out of control on a long flight home after, you know, that was pretty much it. I think things built, you know, once people got out of control, it just got more and more out of control.
Didn't someone get their hair cut off? And
Michael Hayes got his the back. Yeah, I think it was JBL or no, Sean Waltman, I think.
Yes.
One of those two. JBL knocked him out and Sean Waltman cut off his hair.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was Flair spinning himself around?
Yeah, but Flair's done that before. So that was, I mean, that happened. But, and, you know, and the stewardesses sued. So, I mean, you know. So, you know, I think it was on that flight. I mean, I'm pretty sure it was that flight. A lot of them left a mess. Goldust was trying to win back Terry and serenading her, and she was very uncomfortable.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Was that the one? Did Kurt Hennig try to start a fight with Brock Lesnar? Was that the same flight?
I don't know if that was the same flight or not, but it couldn't possibly have been. That's too many. Maybe it was. It just seems like that might have been a different. That's a lot of things happening on one flight.
Well, a lot of things happened on that flight.
That is true. All right. This person here says, was there an altercation? This person wondering about the Bo Dallas. I asking if maybe it had to do with JBL since JBL was dancing around the issue. I did not hear JBL and Bo Dallas having a fight. I don't know if you did. I presume not, since we were talking about it.
I did not hear anything like that, no.
All right. Why hasn't WWE Legal gone after Sin Cara for still using that name? Do they just not care until later this year when they go down to tour Mexico?
They usually, you know, what do you do? You're going to sue in a Mexican court? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Plus, I don't think that they have the rights to the name in Mexico. I think if they were smart,
they'd realize it would probably be good for him to use that name down in Mexico because he's going to have a hard time getting over with it.
Yeah, he doesn't realize it though. It's weird. He's using the Miss whatever it is, Mystices or whatever however it's pronounced.
Miss Disease.
Yeah, he's using that name on TV. And he's using it on some shows, but then he's using Sin Cara on a lot of other shows. So he doesn't even really know what's what you know. I guess he wants to use he wants to use Sin Cara, though. I don't know why, but he does.
John here says, on this past weekend's edition of Scene Limite, Dave mentioned David Von Erich sucker-punched Pat O'Connor and said the incident was bullshit. What happened was as typical of David. I've always heard the Von Erich sons were good guys. They just had their share of issues. This seems out of character. What happened?
I don't know. I don't remember the whole thing. I just remember that, you know, Pat O'Connor was the booker and David punched him, you know, which was kind of weird. But it did happen, yeah.
All right. Steve says, going back to Saturday's show, didn't Scott Steiner get into an altercation with Bill Watts in 92, or was that just verbal?
That was verbal. They wanted to, Scott wanted to fight with him. That was when Bill was going to wanted to break up the Steiners and turn Scott heel and have Scott beat, I think it was Ricky Steamboat for the TV title, somebody. But he wanted to make Scott a heel champion, and Scott didn't want to break up with his brother, which is funny because a couple years later, Scott turned heel and broke up with his brother and seemed to really enjoy it. But at that point in time when Bill suggested it, they just wanted out of the company. And I think they went to WWE or WWF at the time because they were just fed up with WCW and then came back.
All right. This person says, also regarding the Saturday show, how does Michael Hayes continue to have a job with WWE after all of the racist incidents he's had in the past? It's surprising WWE would keep him with the risk of a PR disaster in 2014.
Yeah. You know, when you're entrenched there, you know, he lost a lot of power, though. And he lost a lot of money with, you know, his title being downgraded and things like that over the years. But I guess that they feel that he's very valuable to the company and they don't want to lose him. And, I mean, if they didn't, they'd have gotten rid of him a long time ago. So I think that tells you that they feel he's a very valuable person to have behind the scenes.
All right. Francis says, recently saw on YouTube vintage WWE matches from Maple Leaf Gardens from the mid to late 80s. As I attended many of these matches, I've always wondered why they had commentators at ringside, Gorilla and Bobby, etc., because matches from MLG were never broadcast locally on Toronto TV. Were these matches, where were these matches broadcast?
They were shown on Primetime Wrestling a lot.
He also says, if you have a backstory in the legendary ramp leading to the ring, I've never seen an arena with anything similar.
Yeah, that was one of the makeups of Maple Leaf Gardens, how you always knew where... You always knew it was Maple Leaf Gardens because it looked different from every other arena. I used to like the days when the arenas all had their own separate look. Like now, every single arena, they're all freaking interchangeable. You know, it's like, you know, I mean, there's exceptions.
It's
but for
very
the most
much part, so, especially when you like watch Raw, and it's like
you don't know what city it's from.
Absolutely not. You never know unless there's like a local guy there that gets cheered a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, before, you know, in the 80s, every arena had a different look. I mean, this and the same thing. I guess in Japan, I can kind of tell the arena, you know, definitely. You know, like Sumo Hall has a different look. Budokan's got a look. Korakuen Hall, you know, they all have their distinctive look. But, in North America, you know, even with UFC, I mean, a lot of it's how it's produced. But, I mean, UFC, the arena always looks the same. I don't care if it's Brazil or Hong Kong. It always just looks like it's the same arena.
All right. Steve says, was reading something online that said in 2005, both Nielsen Corporation offered $10 million and Morphoplex offered $20 million to Panda Energy to buy TNA. Is this true? And what were Panda's reasons for knocking back those offers? And do they compare to what Panda was trying to sell the company for last year?
I don't know what the numbers were that they were talking with Toby Keith about, but it wasn't a money issue at the time. So it wouldn't have been too high because Toby Keith wasn't going to overspend for it. But the Morphoplex guy did offer $20 million, but I don't know that he actually had $20 million. And they were interested in it, and I guess... At the time, the way it was explained to me was, they were interested, and then all of a sudden they thought, well, if someone's willing to spend $20 million, maybe this is more valuable than we thought. So then they weren't so hot on selling it. But also, like I said, they weren't sure that guy actually had the money, but when he had the money, you know, I mean, when he did offer the $20 million, they start thinking that maybe this thing's more, you know, maybe we shouldn't sell it. Maybe there's some value in it. This is before they were, I think this might have been before they even got on Spike, or maybe right after. It was, you know, it was like 2005. I think that, you know, it was when Morphoplex was their big sponsor, though, before Morphoplex went out of business.
I was just going to say, probably a good thing they didn't sell to Morphoplex.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Yeah, it's a real good thing, because it would have been out of business immediately if they did sell.
I was fascinated, Hugh says, to hear that Kevin Dunn is on Hunter's hit list. I'd always wondered about their relationship, as I've heard Jim Cornette, Eric Bischoff, Paul Bearer, and former writers completely trash him, justifiably, it seems. But guys like Lawler and Austin seem to get on great with him. Austin even said he'd like him on his podcast. I know Shawn Michaels once had a...
Austin's going to talk to everyone on his podcast. You know, he's not holding grudges.
It says, I know Shawn Michaels once had a big issue with how Dunn acted on a season of Tough Enough. I think it was in his assessment of John Morrison. So the question here is, were there certain issues that arose? What is he asking here? Seems he's very good at his job. His opinions on talent based solely on cosmetics should be kept to himself. Why does Vince protect him so much? Did his father really save some WWF master tapes from a burning car, as Cornette once suggested?
I don't know, but I mean, yeah, they go back a long, long ways, and Vince trusts him or is comfortable with him. I don't know. He knows how to talk to Vince, obviously, because Vince doesn't get along with people for long periods of time. You know, I mean, that's why there's such a huge turnover in that company. But, you know, he's never... Kevin knows how to deal with Vince, and that's probably a hell of a skill that very few people have.
All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up. We've got a new back issue of The Observer coming up tomorrow. We have got a lot of shows coming up, as always, and a ton of audio went up this weekend. So if you have not had a chance to listen to the 8 hours that we put up on Saturday and Sunday, I suggest you head up there and check that out. So that is it for me, everybody. We'll talk to you again after a while.